which he turned losers into Lotharios. The stardom Mystery wanted so desperately was his for the taking, but he wasn't calling anyone back. This has happened before, Martina sighed when I told her about the reality show offers. Every time he gets close to making it, he breaks down and throws it all away. So do you mean? Yes, she said. He's actually scared of the success he wants so badly. Chapter 6. By morning, Mystery's sanity had decomposed further. When he wasn't crying on the couches, he was patrolling the house, trying to make sure Kachi and Herbal were apart. If he couldn't find them, he'd call her. Whether she answered the phone or not, the result was the same. Mystery would fly off the handle and destroy whatever was within arm's or leg's reach. He pulled several bookcases to the ground, decimated his pillows, leaving feathers strewn across his room, and threw his cell phone against the wall, snapping the apparatus in half and leaving a deep black dent in the plaster. "Where's Katya?" he'd ask Playboy. "She's shopping for clothes on Melrose." "Where's Herbal?" "He's, sort of with her." And then Mystery's heart would twist, and his face would fall, and his eyes would leak, and his legs would give out from under him, and he'd make some bizarre evolutionary justification for it all. "It's selfish genes," he'd say. "It's the non-existent potential baby punishing me for leaving." When Herbal returned from shopping on Melrose with Katya, I warned him, "You're being tooled. She's using you to get back at Mystery." "No," he said, "it's not true. We have real feelings for each other." "Well, can you do me a favor and just try not to see her until Mystery gets better? I'm going to ask her to leave the house for a while." "Fine," he said, with some reluctance, "but it's not going to be easy." Seduction was easy compared to this. Even if people were just programs designed by evolution, as Mystery believed, they were apparently too complicated for any of us to truly understand. All we had figured out were a few simple cause and effect relationships. If you lower a woman's self-esteem, she will seek validation from you. If you make a woman jealous, she will become more attracted to you. But beyond attraction and lust, there were deeper feelings that few of us felt and none of us had mastered. And these feelings, for which the heart and the word love were just metaphors, were tearing Project Hollywood, a house already divided, further apart. And so it came to pass that Mystery scared everyone out of the house, and he started talking about killing himself, and I got him a Xanax from Katya, and I put him in my car, and I took him to the Hollywood Mental Health Center, and he tried to run away twice, and he wanted to hit on the therapist, but couldn't. 6 hours later, he left the clinic with a package of Seroquel pills in his hand and another Xanax in his system. I never heard of Seroquel before, so when we returned to the house, I looked at the pamphlet that came with it. "For the treatment of schizophrenia," it read. Mystery took the pamphlet from my hands and looked it over. "They're just sleeping pills," he said. "They'll help me get to sleep." "Right," I told him. "Sleeping pills." Step 10. Blast Last-Minute Resistance. Chapter 1. It was lemonade day at Project Hollywood. At least, that's what Courtney Love had decided. Mystery was recovering. Katya was in New Orleans for 6 weeks, and there were good vibes to be spread. Cigarette hanging from her mouth, dropping ash onto her Betsy Johnson t-shirt, Courtney grabbed a giant mixing bowl from the cabinet. She opened the refrigerator and scanned for liquids, snatching 2 half-gallon cartons of lemonade and a quart of orange juice. She emptied them into the mixing bowl, and when that overflowed, several pots. Then she grabbed a handful of ice cubes from the freezer and dropped them into her brew. Finally, she plunged her black charred fingers into each vessel and stirred. Juice sloshed onto the counter as ashes from the cigarette in her mouth fluttered into the mixing bowl. Stubbing her cigarette out on the yellow tile countertop, she looked around frantically until she noticed an overhead cabinet. She swung the doors open and thrust her hands inside, sticking her fingers into 4 glasses and squeezing them together to pull them out. One by one, she dipped the glasses into the bowl and filled them. Then she grabbed the rest of the glasses, any clean coffee mug she could find, and a Pyrex measuring cup, and sloshed lemonade into all of them. In the living room, Mystery sat cross-legged on a couch, leading his first pickup seminar since returning from the mental health center 3 weeks earlier. He wore a t-shirt and denim overalls. His feet were bare. Patches of unshaven hair dappled his chin, and his eyelids drooped lazily over unfocused eyes. He'd been taking the Seroquel regularly and sleeping out his depression. He was beginning to break through to the other side. There are three phases to a relationship, he told his students, speaking in a torpor. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I'm going through the end right now. I'm not going to lie to you. I've cried 3 times in the last week. His 6 students glanced at each other, confused. They were there to learn to get laid. But for Mystery, this wasn't just a seminar. It was therapy. He'd been telling them about Katya for 2 hours now. This is what you're building up to, and it can be difficult, he went on. My plan for the next girl is to have a fake marriage again. The mistake I made last time was letting Katya and her mother know it was a joke. Next time, I'll have the wedding in the backyard. I'll have an actor be the preacher, and everyone except her and her parents will know we're not really getting married. One of the students, a good-looking man in his 30s with a crew cut and a jaw like a block of cement, raised his hand. But didn't you just get through telling us how the fake marriage was a disaster last time? I was just field testing it, Mystery said. It's a great routine. Whenever Mystery returned from his depressions, his mental bearings shifted a little. This time, there was an anger lurking beneath the surface, along with a new bitterness toward women. Suddenly, Courtney came careening out of the kitchen. Who wants lemonade? The students looked at her dumbstruck. Here you go, she said, forcing a glass on Mystery and another on cement jaw. What are you doing here? She asked. You're cute. I'm a self-defense instructor, he said. Mystery is letting me sit in on the workshop in exchange for lessons in Krav Maga. Courtney shot off to the kitchen and came back with 2 more glasses of lemonade, then 2 more, and 2 more, until there were more glasses than people in the room. I think we're set on lemonade, Mystery said as she returned with 2 coffee mugs in her hands. Where's Herbal? She asked. I think he's showering. Courtney dashed to the bathroom and kicked the door. Herbal, are you there? She kicked the door again, harder. I'm showering, he yelled back. It's important, I'm coming in. She pushed through the door, ran inside, and ripped the shower curtain open. What's going on? Herbal asked, panicked. He stood there naked, his hair streaked white with shampoo. Is the house on fire? I made this for you, Courtney said. She thrust a mug of lemonade in each of Herbal's wet hands and dashed away. Herbal stood there silently. Ever since he'd promised to stop talking to Katya, he'd drifted through the house in a forlorn cloud of silence. Though he was too proud to admit it, his heart ached. He loved her. As Mystery's seminar broke for lunch, Courtney dashed past them and up the stairs to Papa's room, leaving a trail of lemonade drops on the carpet. She burst through the door. Inside, Papa, Sick Boy, Tyler Durden, Playboy, Xanius, and the mini-Papas were working on individual computers. Extra Mask was laying on Papa's unmade bed, reading the Bhagavad Gita. While staying at the house, Extra Mask had gotten bored and started reading Playboy's books on Eastern religion, which had unexpectedly led him down a path of spiritual self-discovery. Courtney, Tyler Durden asked as she distributed drinks, can you get us on the guest list for Joseph's on Monday? Courtney picked up the phone, walked into the bathroom with Tyler, and dialed Brent Bolthouse, a promoter who threw the Monday night parties at Joseph's, famed for their tight guest lists and crowds of gorgeous wannabes. Brent, she said. My friend Tyler Durden is a professional pickup artist. Tyler waved his hands frantically in a futile attempt to signal Courtney not to talk about it. He picks up women for a living. It's really cool. Tyler dropped his head into his hands. Can you put him on the guest list so he can come with some of his pickup artist friends and pick up chicks? Courtney picked a strip of 6 wrapped condoms off the edge of the sink and wrapped it around her wrist like a bracelet, then began exploring the bathroom. She poked her head inside the 2 closets, Papa's infamous guest bedrooms, that were on either side of the toilet. Let me ask you something, she said as she withdrew from Tyler Durden's closet, which contained a suitcase, a pile of dirty clothes, and a mattress on the floor. Do you like women? On the other side of the bathroom's slotted windows, cement jaw dragged a sandbag along the brickwork of the patio. I wasn't a misogynist when I started this, Tyler replied. But you get good and you start sleeping with all these women who have boyfriends, and you stop trusting women. A side effect of sarging is that it can lower one's opinion of the opposite sex. You see too much betrayal, lying, and infidelity. If a woman has been married 3 years or more, you come to learn that she's usually easier to sleep with than a single woman. If a woman has a boyfriend, you learn that you have a better chance of fucking her the night you meet her than getting her to return a phone call later. Women, you eventually realize, are just as bad as men. They're just better at hiding it. I got hurt a lot when I first started picking up, he continued. I'd meet an amazing girl I really liked, and we'd talk all night. She'd say she loved me and was so lucky to have met me, but then I'd fail one shit test, and she'd walk away and wouldn't even talk to me anymore. Everything we'd built up over the last 8 hours would just go down the drain, so it hardened me. There are men in this world who hate women, who do not respect them, who call them bitches and cunts. These are not puas. Puas don't hate women. They fear them. Simply by defining oneself as a pua, a title earned solely by the responses of women, one becomes doomed to derive his entire self-esteem and identity from the attention of the opposite sex, not unlike a comedian's relationship to audience members. If they don't laugh, you're not funny. So, as self-esteem defense mechanisms, some puas developed misogynist tendencies in the process of learning. Sarging could be hazardous to the soul. Outside the window, Cementra held a sandbag as Mystery flailed at it with long, limp punches. Harder, he yelled at Mystery. I want to see more aggression. Chapter 2. I left the house for an hour to get some groceries. Only an hour. And when I returned, there was a red Porsche spewing smoke in the driveway, a 13-year-old girl in the living room, and two pissed-off, bleached blondes smoking on the patio. What the hell's going on? I asked as I kicked the door shut behind me. This is Marie, Mystery said. The cleaning lady's daughter? We were never able to hold on to a maid. The task of cleaning a week's accumulation of ditches, overflowing trash cans, fast food debris, spilt alcohol, and cigarette butts from a dozen guys and countless party girls was more than most could handle. Consequently, Project Hollywood tended to stew in its own filth for a month or more between maids. The latest had set a record. 2 consecutive weeks. The cleaning lady left the house for supplies, so I'm watching her daughter. Mystery took a few strides closer to me. She reminds me of my nieces. It was nice to see Mystery acting somewhat normal again. An adolescent in the house was a calming influence on him. As for the Porsche, Courtney had it brought to the house so that Mystery could drive her to rehearsal. But Mystery had taken the car for a test run and found out the hard way that he couldn't rely on his magical intuition to teach him how to drive a stick shift. And who are they? I asked, pointing to the blondes. They're in Courtney's band. I went out to the patio and introduced myself. I'm Sam, said a slightly tomboyish girl with a Queens accent. I play drums with Courtney. We've met before, I told her. We've met before too, sneered the other girl. Her Long Island accent was so sharp that it startled me. She was 2 inches taller than me. Her hair was pushed straight back over her head like a horse's mane, and her large brown eyes were framed with thick black mascara that reminded me of masturbating as a teenager to Susanna Hoffs in the Bangles video for Walk Like an Egyptian. This girl was the epitome of rock and roll. Yeah, I stammered. I saw you briefly at the Tonight Show. Before that, at that party at the Argyle Hotel where you were talking to those twins the whole night. Oh, the porcelain twins. I couldn't imagine having forgotten her. She was so charismatic. Good posture is one of the things I find most attractive about a woman, and this girl's posture screamed confidence. It also screamed, don't fuck with me. I went back inside and asked Mystery about her. That's Lisa, Courtney's guitarist, he said. She's a total bitch. The girls were visiting because Courtney had planned to tape an acoustic performance at our house for a British television program. But Courtney was nowhere to be found, and Sam and Lisa were fuming. I sat down to pacify her bandmates. I felt so small next to them. I picked up a CD case that belonged to Lisa and thumbed through the discs. I was impressed. She had music by Cesaria Evora, a diva from the Cape Verde Islands. Her mournful songs, backed by a lilting Latin rhythm, are perhaps the best makeup music on the planet. As soon as I saw that CD, I knew I'd met someone I wanted to get to know better. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I dimly recalled what enabled me to meet and interact with women before I'd discovered the seduction community. Commonalities. Simply finding out that you have a passion for something another person also likes and respects is enough to fire that strange emotion we like to call chemistry. Scientists studying pheromones claim that when two people discover they have things in common, pheromones are released and attraction begins. Moments later, Mystery joined us. He dropped into a chair and sat there for a moment, a vortex of neediness, sucking up any stray pheromones Lisa and I had managed to release. "I called Katya today," he said, "and we talked for a while. I still love that girl." He looked at Sam and Lisa, as if trying to select a target. "Do they know about all the drama with Katya?" he asked. The girls rolled their eyes. They had their own drama to deal with. "Well," I excused myself, "I'm going to grab a burrito at Paquito Mas. Nice meeting you, again." I had to get away from there. I didn't want to be associated with the madness, even if I was part of it. By the time I got back to the house, the TV producers from Britain had arrived, along with a prospective manager for Courtney and a stylist. "I can't work with her anymore," the stylist said when it became clear that Courtney wouldn't be showing up in time for the shoot. "Ever since she's been doing drugs, she's become a nightmare to deal with." We hadn't seen any evidence of drugs in the house, but considering Courtney's erratic behavior, perhaps Project Hollywood hadn't kept her away from them as she had hoped. I felt bad for her. She was allowing the problems of the house to distract her from the real-life issues she should have been dealing with. Perhaps we all were. I awoke that night to see Courtney standing at the foot of my bed with a Prada shoe in her hand. "Let's redecorate the house," she said excitedly. "This will be our hammer." I looked at the clock. It was 2:20 a.m. "Do you have any nails or tacks?" she asked. Without waiting for an answer, she ran downstairs and returned with a box of nails, a framed painting for my wall, a throw pillow for my bed, and a smashed pink box that looked like an old Valentine's Day present. "This is the heart-shaped box," she said. "I want you to have it." She picked up my guitar, sat on the edge of my bed, and played my favorite country song, "Long Black Veil." "I'm going to a friend's party tomorrow night at Forbidden City," she said, dropping the guitar to the floor. "I want you to come too. It'll be good for us to get out of the house together." "I'll tell you what," I replied. "I'll meet you there." I knew how long she could take to get ready. "Okay, I'll go with Lisa." "Speaking of Lisa," I said, "there were a bunch of people waiting for you here today, and you were nowhere to be found. I think they're pretty upset." Her face clouded, her lips puckered, and tears dripped from her eyes. "I'm going to get help," she said. "I promise." Chapter 3. I wore a white blazer over a black shirt emblazoned with a scrolling bank of LCD lights that could be programmed with a message. I input the words, "Kill me." I hadn't been out sarging in at least a month and wanted the attention. My expectations for Courtney showing up to Forbidden City were low, so I brought Herbal along as a wing. We had recently flown to Houston together to pick up the Project Hollywood limousine, a 1998 10-passenger stretch Cadillac Herbal had found on eBay. Flush with the success of that scheme, Herbal had, against our better judgment, put down a deposit to buy a wallaby at an exotic pets website. On the way to the party, we argued about the practicality and humanity of having a baby marsupial in the house. "They make the best pets," he insisted. "They're like house-trained kangaroos. They sleep with you, they bathe with you, and you can take them for walks by holding their tail." The last thing we needed was a wallaby in the mix at Project Hollywood. The only bright side to the fiasco was that it made for a great opener. We ran around the party, asking everyone for their opinion on having wallabies as pets. Between the opener and my shirt, within half an hour we were surrounded by women. It felt good to flex our skills again. We'd been so absorbed by the drama of the house that we had forgotten the reason we'd moved there in the first place. As a tall, stoop-shouldered girl who claimed to be a model pawed at my shirt, I saw a mane of bleached blonde hair sticking up out of the crowd. I looked closer. Though she was on the other side of the room, she seemed aglow. Her jaw was set, her face was chiseled, her eyes smoldered beneath a half-shell of heavy blue eyeshadow. It was Courtney's guitarist, Lisa. Next to her, all the wannabe models and actresses I'd been talking to seemed insignificant. She dwarfed them with her style and poise. I excused myself and ran up to her. "Where's Courtney?" I asked. "She was taking too long to get ready, so I came alone. I respect a person who isn't afraid to show up at a party alone." "I am the party," she said, without blinking or smiling. I think she was serious. For the entire night, Lisa and I sat side by side in a chair, the most peacocked couple in the room. The party seemed to come to us, as if we exerted some sort of gravitational pull together. The couches around us soon filled with models, comedians, reality TV has-beens, and Dennis Rodman. When the various women I had talked to during the night came by to flirt, Lisa and I drew on their arms with pens, or fed them shots of hypnotic, or gave them intelligence tests that they usually failed. This is what the poo was called, creating an Our World conspiracy. We were in our own little bubble, where we were king and queen, and everyone else was our plaything for the night. When a phalanx of paparazzi started taking pictures of Dennis Rodman, who was standing nearby, I looked at Lisa's face, illuminated by the flashbulbs, and out of nowhere, my heart awoke from its torpor and body checked my chest. When the party broke up, Lisa put her arm around me and asked, "Will you take me home? I'm too drunk to drive." My heart slammed again and then settled into a fast, arrhythmic throb. She may have been too drunk to drive, but I was too nervous to drive. Without waiting for a response, she dropped the keys to her Mercedes into my hand. I called to Herbal and asked him to drive my car home. "I can't believe it," I told him. "It's on." But it wasn't on. I drove Lisa back to her place. I recognized the building. It was directly across the street from the Hollywood Mental Health Center, where I had taken Mystery. When we arrived, she went to the bathroom. I lay down on her bed and tried to look relaxed. Lisa padded out of the bathroom, looked at me, and then said, with a withering look, "Don't think anything's going to happen between us." "Damn it," I thought, "I'm Style. You have to love me. I'm an M-Pua." She changed and we drove to my house to look for Courtney. All we found there, however, was Tyler Durden leading 10 men in the living room through some sort of exercise that involved running around the couches, yelling loudly, and giving each other high fives. Tyler had been experimenting lately with a technique of physically pumping up his students' mood for a night out meeting women. He believed that whether or not they actually performed better, the shot of adrenaline and camaraderie would make them think they had fun, and thus give Real Social Dynamics good reviews in the seduction newsgroups. It was becoming a competitive industry. Courtney seemed to have disappeared again. Maybe she'd been serious the other night and really was getting help, or maybe she was off getting into more trouble. I took Lisa up to my room, lit some candles, put Cesaria Evora in the CD player, and went to my closet. "Let's have some fun," I told her. I pulled out a garbage bag full of old Halloween costumes. Masks, wigs, hats. We tried them all on, taking photos with my digital camera. I was going to attempt the digital photo routine. We took a photo smiling, then serious. For the third photo, the romantic pose, we gazed at each other. Her eyes seemed so happy. Behind that tough exterior was vulnerability and tenderness. I held her eye contact and moved toward her for the kiss, holding the camera in front of us to capture it. "I'm not kissing you," she barked. The words scalded my face like hot coffee. There was no girl I couldn't kiss within half an hour of meeting her. What was her problem? I froze her out and tried again. Nothing. It is in these moments that, as a Pua, you start to question the work you've done on yourself. You begin to worry that maybe she sees the real you, the one that existed before the silly nickname, the one who wrote poems about this exact situation in high school. I delivered a moving, impassioned performance of the evolution phase shift routine. Somewhere in the distance, I heard 1,000 Puas applauding. "I'm not biting you," she said. I wasn't through. I told her the most beautiful love story ever written. On Meeting, the 100% Perfect Girl, One Beautiful April Morning by Haruki Murakami. It is about a man and a woman who are soulmates. But when they doubt their connection for a moment and decide not to act on it, they lose each other forever. She was ice cold. I tried a hardcore freeze out. I blew out the candles, stopped the music, turned on the lights, and checked my email. She climbed into my bed, curled up under the covers, and went to sleep. Finally, I joined her, and we slept on opposite sides of the bed. I still had one trick left, going caveman. In the morning, without a word, I started massaging her leg, working my hand slowly up her thigh. If I could just turn her on physically, her logic would disengage, and she would no doubt submit. My intention wasn't to use Lisa for sex. I knew I wanted to see her again, no matter what happened. I just wanted to get the whole sex thing over with so that we could be normal together. She wouldn't be trying to keep anything from me. I wouldn't be trying to get something. I always hated the idea that sex is something a woman gives and a man takes. It's something that should be shared. But Lisa wasn't sharing. As I began to rub the warm crease where her thigh met her pelvis, Her voice rang shrill in the air like an alarm clock. "What are you doing?" She smacked my hand away. We had breakfast together, and lunch, and dinner. We talked about Courtney and the Puas and my writing and her music and our lives and all kinds of other things that I can't remember but must have been fascinating because hours passed in the blink of an eye. She was my age. She liked all the same bands I did. She said something intelligent every time she opened her mouth. She laughed at my jokes that were funny and made fun of the ones that weren't. She spent another night with me. Nothing happened. I had met my match. Chapter 4. I told Mystery about my frustration with Lisa as we sat in the hot tub one night. I'd turned to him so often in the past for advice on women, and he'd rarely steered me wrong. Though relationship management was clearly not his forte, he was flawless when it came to blasting through last-minute resistance. "Start stroking yourself," he said. "Now, here?" "No, next time you're in bed together, just take your cock out and start stroking it." "Then what?" "Then you take her hand and put it on your balls, and she'll start giving you a hand job." "Are you serious?" "Yes. Then put your finger on your dick and put a little pre-cum on it and put your finger in her mouth." "No way. This is like that bad joke advice you see in movies where the friend does it and the girl freaks out and the guy who gave the advice goes, I thought you knew I was kidding." "I'm totally serious. You've practically had sex after that." 3 days later, after the bars closed at 2 a.m., Lisa dropped by my house with Sam, Courtney's drummer. She was wasted. We climbed into bed and babbled to each other for hours. "I don't know what my problem is," she slurred. "I never want to leave your room. I could just listen to you talk forever." She rolled toward me. "Forget I said that," she snapped. "I didn't mean it. Alcohol is like a truth serum." Now was my chance. Mystery's words ran through my head, and I considered the pros and cons of stroking myself and placing her hand on me. I couldn't do it. Not because I was scared, but because there was no way it was going to work. Lisa would have laughed in my face and said something cutting like, "You might as well touch yourself, because I'm certainly not about to." Then she would have told all her friends about the cheesy guy who started rubbing his dick in front of her. Mystery wasn't always right. So we spent another platonic night together. It was driving me crazy. I knew she liked me, yet she wouldn't get intimate. I was teetering on the border of being put in LJBF zone, let's just be friends. Maybe I just wasn't her type. I imagined her with tattooed, muscle-bound, leather-jacketed Danzig types, not scrawny metrosexual guys who had to take pickup workshops. She was killing me. For the first time since I'd learned the word one-itis, I had it, and I knew that I was doomed. No one ever gets his one-itis. He gets too clingy and needy and blows it. And sure enough, I blew it. The next night, Lisa left town to play a festival in Atlanta with Courtney. She called 3 times while she was gone. "Are you free for dinner when I get back?" she asked. "I don't know," I told her. "Depends on whether you can behave yourself or not." "Fine then," she said. "If you're going to be like that, I don't need to go." I was just trying to tease her and bust her balls like David D'Angelo had taught me. And in doing so, I had destroyed the moment. I sounded like an asshole. "Don't be a troublemaker," I said. It was time to be straightforward. "I want to see you when you're back. I'm leaving town for 2 weeks, so it'll be our last chance to hang out." In the background, I could hear Sam speaking. "You're talking to him like he's your boyfriend," she told Lisa. "Maybe I want him to be my boyfriend," Lisa said to her. So I hadn't been LJBF'd. I couldn't wait for her to come back. I wanted her to be my girlfriend, too. I spent the entire day of Lisa's return plotting the perfect seduction. I would pick her up from the airport in the limo. Herbal would drive, and I would wait for her in the back seat. Then I'd take her to the whiskey bar at the Sunset Marquis Hotel, walking distance from Project Hollywood. Because women don't respect guys who pay for them, but at the same time are turned off by guys who are cheap, I went to the whiskey bar ahead of time, gave the manager $100, and told him to make sure whatever we ordered was on the house. Afterward, I planned to take her home. On my computer, I wrote down all the patterns and routines I would use to combat any LMR, last-minute resistance. Now that I knew she liked me, I had the confidence to push this thing to the end. If she still resisted, then she clearly had intimacy issues, and I'd have to be the one to LJBF her. Her flight was scheduled to arrive at 6:30 p.m. As Erbil drove the limo past the Delta terminal looking for her, I mixed cosmopolitans at the bar in the back of the car. When the flight arrived, however, she wasn't on it. I was confused, but not disappointed, yet. Apua must be willing to change or abandon any plan when confronted with the chaos and chance of reality. So Erbil drove me home, and I left a message for Lisa. When she didn't call back, I left another message and then waited all night in vain to hear from her. At 5 o'clock that morning, I was awakened by my cell phone ringing. "Sorry to wake you up, but I needed to talk to someone." The voice on the other end was a man's. The accent was Australian. It was Sweater from Mystery's first workshop. Since I'd last talked to Sweater, he had left the community and gotten married. I thought about him often. Every time someone asked if guys in the community were learning these skills just to have sex with as many women as possible, I pointed to Sweater as an example of someone who had gotten into the game for all the right reasons. "I tried to kill myself today," he said. "What happened?" "My wife is expecting our first baby in 10 days, and I'm miserable. I do everything for her, but it's not enough. She's driven me away from my friends. My business partner is leaving me. She spends all my money, and all she does is complain." He paused to choke back his tears. "And now that she's having this baby, I'm trapped." "But you were in love with her. How can she just change?" "No, the problem is that I changed. It was too hard to be that person who Mystery and David D'Angelo taught us to be. That person wasn't a good guy, and that's not the kind of person I wanted to be. I like doing nice things for people. So I got her whatever she wanted. I sent her flowers 3 times a week. I tried it her way, but it didn't work." I'd never heard grown men cry as much as I had in the last 2 years. "I sat in the garage today with the motor running and the windows up." He continued, "I haven't thought of suicide since 86, but I just got to the point where I was like, fuck. I didn't see any purpose in living." Sweater didn't need to be saved. He just wanted someone to talk to. He had pretended to be someone he wasn't, just to seduce a woman, and now he was suffering the consequences. "When I first got in the community, I wrote down everything I wanted," he said. "And now I'm living the life I imagined. I have the money, the big house, and the beautiful girl. But I wasn't specific enough about the beautiful girl. I never wrote that she had to treat me with respect and kindness." Later that morning, Courtney returned to the house. I could hear her rearranging furniture in the living room. "Did the rest of the band get back from Atlanta yet?" I asked her, trying to sound casual. "Yeah, they came home on an earlier flight." I turned away quickly. I knew if I said anything in response, my voice would betray my disappointment. Courtney threw a bundle of sage on the coffee table. "Let's clear the air in here," she said. Then she skipped off to the kitchen, explaining, "We need some rice for good fortune." Unable to locate any rice, she returned with a package of jambalaya mix and a bowl of water. She poured the jambalaya mix into the water, planted the sage in the middle of it, and then ran to her room. She emerged carrying a blue and white checked flannel shirt. "This will work," she said. "It's one of Kurt's shirts. I only have 3 left. She carefully arranged the shirt underneath the table, safe from harm, so that it could bring good energy to the house. After lighting the sage, she sat Mystery, Erbil, and me down next to her makeshift altar, and we joined hands. Her grip was bone-crushing. "Thank you, God, for this day and all that you have given us," she prayed. "We ask that you clear the energy of this house of all evil. Please bring peace and harmony and friendship under this roof. And help me win my court case in New York and help clear up all my other problems. I will work with you, God. I really will. Give me strength. Amen." The next day, a driver came and whisked Courtney to the airport to go to New York. There, her prayers for herself would eventually be answered, but the atmosphere in the house would only grow darker in her absence. Courtney, it soon became clear, wasn't the cause of any problems. She had merely been the symptom of something much larger that was eating away at our lives. Chapter 5. That afternoon, Lisa left me a short voicemail. "Hi, it's Lisa. I'm back. We took an earlier flight." That was it. No apology, no tenderness, no mention of the plan she had completely blown off. I called her back, but she didn't answer. "I'm leaving town in a few hours to go to Miami with Vision, I told her voicemail. I would really love to talk to you before I leave. It was an AFC message, and I never heard back from her. I checked my voicemail every day while I was away. Nothing. I didn't stalk women, like other guys in the community. If she were interested, she would have called. I'd been blown off, and by the first woman I had felt something for in a while. I figured she'd probably started dating someone else, someone who had been able to break through her LMR. First I was angry at her, then I was angry at myself, and then I was just sad. The Puas had always advised that the best way to get over a one-itis is to fuck a dozen other girls. So I went on a rampage. I didn't want to end up like Sweater anyway. I had almost let myself get caught. I went sarging every night in Miami, with more fire, drive, and success than I'd ever had. I've never been a fan of one-night stands. Once you've gotten that close to someone, why throw it away afterward? I'm more a fan of 10-night stands. 10 nights of great sex, each one getting steamier, wilder, and more experimental as two people grow more comfortable together and learn what turns each other on. So after I slept with each woman, I mixed and matched them like jelly beans. It was my reality. The girls I was most looking forward to getting together were Jessica, a tattoo-covered 21-year-old I'd slept with a few times in Los Angeles, and another Jessica, whom I'd met at Crowbar. She was also 21, but the exact opposite of Jessica 1. She was innocent-looking, with a touch of baby fat. I knew they both liked porn, so I thought things might get interesting. After a drink at the hotel bar, I brought them up to my room for a rune reading, and then left them alone for a few minutes to get acquainted. When I returned, I showed them home movies on my laptop, and then began the trusty dual induction massage. It was all just a routine now, like the jealous girlfriend opener or the best friends test, and it worked just as consistently. Once the girls' lips touched, they transformed from strangers to lovers. It shocked me every time to see two women get intimate so quickly in such an unusual situation. The night was as nasty as I'd anticipated. We tried every position we could twist into, some more successfully than others. When Jessica asked me to come in her mouth, I obliged. She spit it into Jessica 2's mouth, and they started making out passionately. It was the sexiest moment of my entire life. But afterward, I felt empty and alone. I didn't care about them. All I really had was a memory and a story. Every girl in my life could disappear and never call me again, and I wouldn't have cared. All the 10-night stands and threesomes in the world wouldn't be enough to get me over my one-itis. The Puas were wrong. Chapter 6. While I was in Miami, Katya returned. I dreaded the day and the terror it would unleash in the house, but Mystery was looking forward to it like a birthday. He had it all planned out. Because I was away, I've reconstructed the story of the disaster that ensued from the accounts of those involved. Project Hollywood had reached a new nadir. Katya. Mystery called me every other day while I was in New Orleans, trying to sweet-talk me. He said, I have this beautiful 19-year-old girl named Jen that you'll love. I asked him if he was giving her to me. He said, no, we're sharing. Mystery. The idea wasn't for Katya to be my girlfriend again, but to be a play toy for Jen and me. My plan was to pick her up from the airport in the limo, grab some food at the farmer's market, and then go back to the house and do the dual induction massage. Herbal. I ignored Katya for almost the entire month and a half she was gone, even though she kept sending me text messages. Mystery spent the whole time bragging about how he was going to get a threesome with her, which was like a knife being twisted in my heart. But I sucked it up and listened. I told Mystery repeatedly, just to ignore her and not let her back in the house to avoid problems. But he wouldn't do it. Katya. I flew into Los Angeles the day before, which Mystery doesn't know, to rent a studio apartment and hang out with some friends from New Orleans. I stayed in a hotel and called Herbal to talk, because at that point I really wanted to start dating him. The next morning, I just showed up at the house and told Mystery my plane got in early, so I took a taxi. Herbal. When I came home from doing errands and saw Katya's suitcases, I went into my room to mind my own business. However, Mystery and Katya came in and started talking to me. Then we went to Mystery's bathroom, and Katya painted our nails. She disappeared into Mystery's walk-in closet to get a sweater, then Mystery went in. After 5 minutes, they were still in the closet. Mystery. She called me into the closet and said, I want to date Herbal. I don't think she said it because she truly wanted to be with him. She just said it to bug me. I was being too kissy-kissy with Jen, and I believe that triggered jealousy in her. So I called Erbil into the closet and told Katya, why don't you say it to him? Erbil. That night, we went on a double date. It was pretty normal at first, and I guess I was naive, but I really thought everything would be fine. Mystery. Jen and Katya ended up making out with each other in a limo that night. I have pictures of them sucking each other's tits in a phone booth at the Santa Monica Pier, but it was getting complex. I felt that Katya was trying to steal Jen from me and share her with Erbil. So I got pissed at Katya in the car and we had a blow up. Jen saw this and said, just take me home. After that, she asked me never to call her again. Mystery, as posted in Mystery's Lounge. Be on the lookout for Erbil, Katya, and Jen. If anyone sees Erbil, easy to spot as he frequently peacocks, or his girlfriend Katya, a bi Russian 9.5, easy to spot, with Jen, a 19-year-old Mexican 9.5, also easy to spot, please call Mystery so I may administer punishment to Erbil without warning. Mystery. Erbil and I still had a business relationship, so we went to Chicago together for a workshop. Because I'm fascinated by the mind, I'd explain to him the jealousy I was feeling, and we'd draw various boundaries on his relationship with my ex. Erbil. On the last day of the Chicago workshop, Mystery and I went to get food together. Mystery opened a four set of girls next to us. He told them the whole story. I'd occasionally give my perspective, and he started getting really angry. He said out of nowhere, Katya is not allowed in my house ever again. I said, it's my house too. You created this situation. He said, if I see her in the house again, I will end you. And I told him, do what you have to do. Katya. After Chicago, Erbil left town to visit his family. While he was gone, I was helping Papa with his workshops. We finished late on Friday night, and I had to be up in the afternoon and look pretty. So Papa told me to sleep in Erbil's room. When I woke up, I saw Mystery. He asked me what I was doing in the house, and I said, Pop and I were hanging out last night. We had fun. Then I said, I met one of your friends. He said, who did you meet? I said, Sima. And he freaked out. Mystery. When Katya told me in a very glib way that she had hung out with my ex-girlfriend from Toronto, I was furious. I lost Jen because of her, and now she was about to steal Sima, who was still an option. Katya. He ran past me and kicked Erbil's door off the hinges and said, where's Erbil? Then he ran back to his room, grabbed a framed photograph of Sima, and threw it at the wall over Erbil's bed. He said, I don't want you in this house when your boyfriend's not here. Mystery. I knew I couldn't reason with Katya, and I couldn't touch her, so I decided to frighten her. I told her I wanted her out of the house. She said, this isn't your house, and I told her, I pay rent, you're a guest, this is not acceptable. Katya. Mystery threatened that if he saw me in the house again, Erbil would get hurt. He flipped Erbil's mattress off the bed, he threw a flower pot against the wall, and then he opened Erbil's balcony door and started throwing my stuff into the driveway. He busted my bottle of Kama Sutra oil. I was so pissed. Mystery. I said, don't come back here or else. She said back to me, or else what? Are you going to kill me? And I said, no, I love you. I will punish your boyfriend if you come back. Tell him to control his girl. Katya. I went upstairs to look for Papa, but he wasn't there. So I got in my car and drove to my apartment. 5 minutes later, Papa called. He said, it's not Mystery's house. My name is on the lease and you're my guest. I'm going to pick you up right now. So he snuck me back into the house. Erbil, to Mystery via email. I have been told that my bedroom and personal belongings have been destroyed because Katya was at the house. I don't know exactly what destroyed means, but now I do not feel safe in my own house. You seem to believe that the world revolves around you and that everyone else should bend to your wishes. Mystery, to Erbil via email. I don't want Katya here, and that is so final, there will be no need for you to reply to this email in any way. If you bring up the subject again, it will arouse my anger so deeply that you will be thrown through glass. If she comes around when you return, I will instantly pound you. It will be fast, hard, unexpected, merciless, and repetitive. If she isn't around, then we can safely live in peace, though I will take measures to avoid you. Either way, our business relationship is obviously finished. Chapter 7. My phone rang every day while I was in Miami. I'd pick it up, and it would be Mystery, or Erbil, or Katya, or Tyler Durden. I even received phone calls about Project Austin, which was also falling apart. The gas and electricity had been shut off because the bills hadn't been paid, and the bedrooms were cluttered with candles, dirty clothing, and pornography. But the only person I really wanted to hear from was Lisa. When I returned to Project Hollywood, Erbil's room was in tatters. There were holes in his wall. His door was propped up precariously against its hinges. His mattress lay over his television set, and glass and dirt were strewn across the hardwood floor. From the perspective of a pickup, all Mystery was doing was strengthening Katya's and Erbil's relationship by creating drama and a common enemy. But Mystery wasn't thinking like a pickup artist. He was unable to control himself. That night, the doorbell rang. When Mystery answered it, he found a well-muscled man in his 20s, standing in the rain with an angry look on his face. Katya's car was parked in front of the house. "I'm Katya's brother," the man told Mystery. "I don't think so. I know her brother." "Well," he said, stepping past Mystery and into the house, "I heard you threatened to kill her, and that's not going to happen." "I never threatened Katya." Mystery sized Katya's friend up. He was shorter than him, but definitely stronger. "I threatened Erbil." "Well, if you do anything to her, I will personally crack your skull wide open." Mystery never responded well to provocation. Mystery snapped. The veins in his neck leaped to attention. His face ripened. He grew an inch. "You want to go?" Mystery yelled. "Let's go then, because I'm ready to take this thing all the way." "Fine," Katya's friend said. "Then step outside. I don't want to get blood on the carpet." "No, let's do it right here. I want blood on the floor. I want something to remember you by." In the periphery of his vision, Mystery spotted a cluster of large rocks he'd brought back from the beach and painted into runestones. He reached for one, prepared to smash his adversary's head in, then quickly changed his mind. He took three giant strides to Erbil's already decimated door and kicked it to the ground again. "Come on then," Mystery yelled. "I'm not making any apologies for what I'm about to do." He grabbed a bookshelf and pulled it over. Katya's friend saw the gleam of madness in Mystery's eyes, and in a fight, the insane generally have a competitive edge. "You don't have to kick doors down and shit," he said, backing off. "All I want is the dog, man. Katya sent me to get her dog." The guy scooped Lily into his arms, and Mystery paused and looked at him. The threat was gone. The cortisol, the adrenaline, the testosterone, all those hormones that were rushing through his body began to ebb. His brain returned to logical mode. "Why didn't you say that in the first place instead of threatening me in my own home?" The guy stood next to the door, befuddled, with Lily cradled in his arms. "Do you need food for Lily?" Mystery asked. Yes, I guess." Mystery walked to the kitchen, grabbed Lily's bag of dry food and several cans of wet food, and gave them to his would-be attacker. On the way out, the guy dropped some cans on the steps. Mystery bent down, picked them up, handed them to him, and then patted him on the back. "Respect," he told Katya's friend, using the line we'd appropriated from Ali G for use in the field. I walked upstairs, collapsed on my bed, and stared at the ceiling. Why was I here? It wasn't just about my envy of Dustin anymore. Along the way, I had gotten caught up in the social network and bonding rituals of the community, in the idea that we were the supermen of the future, the smoothest who would inherit the earth from the strong, the sole owners of the skeleton key to the female mind. I had moved in with these guys because I thought we had all the answers. I imagined working together to bring all the other areas of our lives up to a new plateau, beyond just women. I hoped we would be greater than the sum of our parts. But rather than creating a mutual support system, we had created Lord of the Flies. Something had to be done to resolve this. My faith in these guys and this community was hanging by a thread. Step 11. Manage expectations. Chapter 1. Mystery and Erbil sat facing each other on opposite couches, their arms folded across their chests. It was not only a defensive position, but also a stubborn one. Between them stood Cementjaw, Mystery's Krav Maga instructor, and Road King, a Pua who worked as a bodyguard. Erbil had refused to set foot in the house without someone there to protect him from Mystery. The other permanent residents, Papa, Xanius, Playboy, and myself, sat on a third couch, perpendicular to them. Tyler Durden didn't attend, because he claimed to be a guest, although he'd been living in Papa's closet for months now. We had called a house meeting to resolve the dispute between Mystery and Erbil once and for all. We allowed each to present his side of the story without interruption. Mystery said he would not allow his ex-girlfriend to set foot in the house again. And Herbal said he would move out if his girlfriend couldn't come over. It took each of them half an hour to convey these simple points. Now normally, I would just say that Herbal should move out if he wants to be with Mystery's ex-girlfriend that badly, I said, trying to play the role of peacemaker that had been foisted on me. However, Mystery, you've damaged house property and threatened the tenant's well-being. You've neither apologized for your actions nor repaired the damages. Herbal's door was still lying on the floor, the dents were still in his wall, and his room still looked like a tornado had hit it. And it makes us very reluctant to reward bad behavior by letting you get your way. I purposely left Herbal's room like that as a demonstration of what I will do if I see Katya in this house again, Mystery said sullenly. It was a perfectly acceptable means of showing that I was willing to enforce my rules. One of the problems with the Pua community was that it presented inflexible standards of behavior that men were supposed to follow in order to win a woman. And chief among them was the idea of being an alpha male. The result was a bunch of men who'd been kicked around most of their lives trying to act like their former bullies, leading to immature behavior such as Mystery's. If I may say something, Rogue King interjected, Herbal here broke an important rule. And what's that? Herbal asked. There was no anger or resentment in his voice. Only the red rings around his eyes betrayed the emotion he felt. It's the rule of bros before hoes, Road King said. No, Mystery said. I'd like to agree, but sometimes it's hoes before bros. Herbal cracked a smile for the first time that afternoon. He and Mystery actually saw eye to eye on something. Strip away the community bond and the seduction business interest that united us, and what was left? 6 guys chasing after a limited subset of available women. Wars had been fought, world leaders shot, and tragedies wrought by males claiming territorial rights over the opposite sex. Perhaps we'd just been too blind to see that Project Hollywood was doomed from the start by the very pursuit that had brought it together. After 3 hours of go-nowhere debate, during which Papa, oddly, didn't speak once, we asked Mystery and Herbal to give us some privacy to talk amongst ourselves and come to a house decision. They both agreed to accept whatever we decided. When we entered Papa's room, there was a flurry of activity. Several figures darted into his bathroom and shut the door. I hadn't seen his room in nearly a month. The carpet was barely visible beneath 6 convertible black foam chairs that had been unfolded into beds. On top of each was a pillow and bedding. Where were the people who slept here? Who were they? We folded the beds back into chairs, sat down, and prepared to reach a conclusion. That was when Papa spoke for the first time. I will not live in the same house as that guy, he said. Who? I asked. Mystery. Papa's hands trembled from either hatred or nervousness. He was a difficult person to read. He hadn't been sergeant in months, and much of the progress he'd made after working so hard to improve himself had disappeared. He was the same blank, introverted shell I had first met in Toronto. His passion was no longer pickup. It was real social dynamics. Instead of going to seminars on meeting women, he spent most of his time flying around the country to marketing and business seminars. Mystery disrupts my workshops, Papa continued. His voice was distant and monotone, echoing from somewhere deep inside his head. He damages the house, and I'm worried he's going to harm me. What are you talking about? He wouldn't do anything to you. I have nightmares that Mystery is coming into my room with a knife. I'm getting locks put on my doors because I'm scared he'll break in. That's ridiculous, I said. He's not going to hurt you. That's your own issue. You need to learn how to deal with aggression and confrontation rather than just avoiding everyone and trying to kick them out of the house. But no matter what I said to dissuade Papa, he kept repeating the same sentence. I will not live in the same house as that guy, in a robotic voice, as if he'd been programmed to say it. Have you ever stopped to think, Playboy finally asked me, that the only reason you're defending Mystery is because he's your friend? Perhaps Playboy was right. I was giving Mystery special circumstances treatment because he had brought me into the community and because the house had been his idea. None of us would have been here without him, but he had screwed up. He had made his bed. I needed to consider what was best for the house. But, I said, I'd still like to find a way to solve this without anyone having to leave the house. We'll trust whatever you decide, Papa said. You're the house leader. Everyone looks up to you. I found it strange that Papa, who was so adamant about having Mystery leave, was putting the decision in my hands. For the next 2.5 hours, we discussed possible compromises. The more we talked about it, the more complex the dilemma seemed. There was no solution that was going to satisfy everyone. Papa wouldn't live in the house with Mystery. Mystery wouldn't live in the house with Katya. And Herbal wouldn't live in the house without Katya. Someone had to go. All the problems in this house can be traced back to one source, Playboy said firmly, and that source is Mystery. I looked at Xanius. Do you agree with Playboy and Papa? I asked him. I do, he said. He too seemed to speak from somewhere deep in his skull, as if he weren't really present. He was turning as robotic as the rest of them. I think Mystery needs to go. Chapter 2. We called Mystery and Herbal into the room to give them our decision. They sat on the edge of the step leading up to Papa's bed. Having come up with only one possible compromise for a complicated dilemma, I was proud of myself, mistakenly, it would turn out, for exercising my newfound leadership skills in a Solomon-like manner. Herbal, I began, Katya will not be allowed in the house for 2 months. After that, if you're still dating her, she may return to the house. Herbal nodded. Mystery, you have 2 months to get over Katya and find yourself a new girlfriend. In addition, there will be a zero-tolerance policy for violence in this house. If you threaten anyone's life, attack anyone, or damage property, you'll be asked to leave the house immediately. Mystery didn't nod. So basically you're saying you want me out of the house, and that bitch gets to replace me, he snarled. Well, Playboy said, there's always the chance Herbal and Katya will break up in that time. I don't see that happening, Herbal said. Mystery threw his arms into the air. Well, then you guys are kicking me out. No, I said. We're giving you 2 months to come to grips with your emotions. I was trying to help him, but he refused to be helped. If you give me at least 2 weeks' notice before you leave, Papa said, I'll refund your full deposit and find someone to fill the room. Papa was happy. He was getting his way. Mystery's forehead creased. His head twitched involuntarily. You realize, he said, that Papa is trying to get me out of the house because he's in competition with me. This is not about Mystery versus Herbal. It's about Mystery Method versus real social dynamics. I gave Papa his entire business model. I told him to harness his sex drive and become a businessman. He's even charging $1,500 now for boot camps, where he teaches my material. Mystery glared at Papa. Papa stared right through Mystery. And now that he doesn't need me anymore, he wants to move me out and turn my room into a 12-person dorm. At the time, I thought Mystery was in denial, that he was still refusing to take responsibility for his actions. It didn't have to turn out like this, I told him. Every step of the way, you've made bad decisions, and now you have to live with them. We're not even kicking you out. You're deciding to leave. Mystery folded his arms across his chest and looked at us disdainfully. Can't you see, I continued, that the actions you think are alpha male ways to solve a problem actually prevented you from getting the outcome you wanted? It was a tactic designed to keep Katya out of the house, and it worked, he maintained. She hasn't been back since. I lost my cool. It was time for him to wake up and take a good look at himself. You need some tough love, I said, raising my voice for the first time all meeting. You're the best illusionist I've ever seen, yet you haven't taken a single step toward your 90-minute show, or any show for that matter, since I've met you. Your pickup business is a mess, and your former students are raking in all the money that should be yours. As for your love life, ever since Katya, you've driven away every girl you've slept with. I would not recommend a girl ever dating you. You're a financial, mental, and emotional mess. With each sentence, I felt like a weight was being lifted off my chest. You have nothing. No health, no wealth, and no relationships. And you have no one to blame but yourself. Mystery dropped his head into his hands. His shoulders started shaking. Big Mystery tears rolled out of his eyes. I'm a broken man, he cried. I'm broken. The wall of sophistry and self-deception that had been propping him up came tumbling down. What should I do? He looked at me. Tell me what to do. Tears began leaking out of my eyes. I couldn't help it. I turned and faced the wall so Herbal and Papa wouldn't see. The tears ran faster. Despite all of Mystery's flaws, I still cared about the guy. After 2 years in the seduction community, I still didn't have a girlfriend, but for some reason, I had bonded with this big, blubbering genius. Perhaps it was really shared emotion and experience that creates relationships, not 7 hours of routines followed by 2 hours of sex. You need therapy, I said. You need treatment or counseling or something. You can't just keep doing this to yourself. I know, he said. His eyes filled with tears, as viscous as mercury. He balled his hand into a fist and hit his head self-castigatingly. I know. I fucked up. Chapter 3. I walked out of Papa's room and left the house. I had a headache. It had been a long day. As I started down the hill to grab a burrito at Paquito Moss, a black Mercedes convertible whipped around the corner and began climbing the hill. Inside were two blondes. The car screeched to a halt in front of me, and a voice yelled my name from the driver's seat. It was Lisa. My heart skipped a beat. She wore a red diesel jacket with a wide rainbow collar that made her look like a cross between a supermodel and a race car driver. I was unshaven, wearing sweatpants, and frazzled from debating with my roommates all day. I felt so many emotions at once,